It's the Mike Tech Show, show number 717. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Mike Smith. Thank you very much for downloading and subscribing to the show. Please visit the main website at miketechshow.com. You can email me questions and suggestions at miketechshow@gmail.com. You can leave me a voicemail on Skype. The name is Mike Tech Show, all one word. You can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/miketechshow, and also facebook.com/Mike Tech Show. This show is brought to you by Instant House Call. Remotely support your customers unattended and on demand through firewalls. Try it free by clicking on the link on my website at miketechshow.com. Use the promo code MikeTechShow for your free 15-day trial, and you can go directly to instanthousecall.com. It is my great pleasure to announce that there is a new sponsor added to the Mike Tech Show, and I am proud to welcome Magnusbox as a sponsor of the Mike Tech Show. You can get secure, reliable, single source for all of your cloud backups, whether it's a server, a workstation. The client that's used is cross-platform. Windows, Mac, Linux, you can even back up to the cloud. They only work with the channel. So all of your clients, they will not sell direct. You can easily organize and get the backup set up. I have a lot of, matter of fact, every client that was previously on another platform that I was very unhappy with, I have moved. And I have been using them over a month, and the backups are just working great. I love the reports that I get. This is what you need for your online backups. It's reliable, and there's a special deal right now for you listening to the Mike Tech Show. You mention the Mike Tech Show, you will get your first 3 months at half price. This is a great deal. Check them out, Magnus, MagnusBox.com. You can get a demo. You can check the video out for onboarding, for what to learn, everything you need to know. So I highly recommend testing it out, and you'll like it. And we welcome them and glad to have them as a sponsor of the show. Tonight's show, I have a stack of email that I must get to. That's going to happen first. Going to go through all the email. Then SSD optimization, tweaks, tips, something I had to do research on, which is, what is rapid mode? Well, I'm going to tell you, and I'm going to, something I figured out on when you should invoke it and when you shouldn't. Some great sites on tuning and what you should be doing since now we have SSDs on all of our systems, or at least we should. Next, StarDock. They have some utilities, but I learned of a new one that I got to share with you. After I signed off last week, I demonstrated a trackball mouse at the end that I want to put a link to and just do a quick talk about if there's time. So let's begin with all the email. Now, this has been sitting since December from Kate. So she kind of beats up when I talked about the lessons learned from Freedom Voice. Hi, Mike. Merry Christmas. This was before Christmas. You discussed some lessons learned during your VoIP phone system implementation last week. I come out of a telecom background, the old-fashioned pre-VoIP kind of telecom. I spent a long time in that industry. Many years of it working with implementation of large to extremely large PBX systems. Part of my job was to discover customer requirements pre-implementation, preferably pre-sale, and know or find out how we could implement our company solution. And I've been the customer too. Let me just say that if I was your customer, I would have been very agitated to discover, one, there is no line in use indicator on the very same model of telephone set that my previous provider was able to give me one, and the unbelievable kludgy pop-out you described available only to very special users, and no one even bothered to ask if I needed international calling, let alone discover that the solution you bid couldn't provide it without a workaround that is destined to fail at some point. That's not a workaround. All I had to do was turn it on. And I've only rolled it out to a couple small clients, and clearly they don't make international calls, and I followed up to find out if they did and should it be blocked or not. So that was a lesson learned for me. That was big, but that didn't impact the client too bad. And then third, there was some issue with faxing, but I was driving in a snowstorm, and I think I missed the actual problem. It was file size. And yes, it was the file size, and I showed them how to reduce the file size when they're sending the fax. So that solved the problem. Also, I see that in the 23 years since I've been away from managing the porting of toll-free numbers from one carrier to another, VoIP providers have taken their cue from the old-time telcos. Lying liars lie about when and if the porting needs to be done, and jerk the customers around on paperwork issues. Congratulations on having built such a strong relationship with that company that they were willing to be patient after the cutover. Yes, and that is because I do have a very good relationship, and I am very, very lucky. Sometimes I get lucky that way too, but mostly everyone expected things to go correctly and on time. If you're going to partner with that VoIP company, I hope you will strongly urge them to get someone on their staff or get someone on yours who understands how things like making and receiving telephone calls actually works from the perspective of the people making and receiving the calls. Holy crap, Mike. Do you ever call anyone outside the United States? Is like question number three on the check sheet when you start discussing requirements with the customer. And it's also question number three on the other check sheet, the one you use with the vendor. How is international calling implemented, and how do I connect when that goes sideways? You're correct. You can absolutely view projects like this as if they were actually like network implementations. But people who use phones and computers don't think of them as the same thing. Even when computers and networks and printers go tango uniform, people expect to be able to use the phone, even I think now. Now, you're absolutely correct. Good luck clearing your first batch of telephone-related trouble tickets. I have plenty of stories. Open up a beer and give me a call sometime. Wishing you and yours the very best in 2020. Kate, I'm sorry it took so long to read and get to this email, but Kate and I know each other enough that she can, and rightfully so, beat me up in not approaching that like a network implementation and having the right checklist, because I would never allow this happening on a server migration or migrating to new computers or, you know, changing out a network infrastructure or a company moving. Yeah, I have great checklists that we follow, and that's something I failed. That is the biggest takeaway here, and why I want to make sure to share this with everybody listening to this. If you're thinking of taking on a new product, then you better have a checklist of all the things. And the same with like remote access with Instant House Call or Magnus Box for the backups. You're going to be implementing something new. make sure you understand everything and have your checklist in place as you're talking with a client and you're going to be now selling and providing a new service. And this was, that's why there was so many lessons learned. It was a real kick in the butt. And just so you know, none of the things post-installation that I worked on were billable at all. None of that. That when I would call tech support or try things. And I'm embarrassed to say there was even two more things after that that came after that show that I had to take care of. And one of them, and I was slow in requesting the CNOM, which is the name that's displayed when they're calling out for their caller ID. Kate, you're going to beat me up on that one too. That's one that slipped by me, and I should have known that. And that came after that Lessons Learned show. So my checklist now is in place, and it's still building. And by the way, I have not rolled out any other deployments until all of this is in place and we have it down and everything that we learned, everything that you shared, and there's more, that we're going to be in a better position so there will be no pain and suffering at all. So you got to learn from your lessons or you can't grow. Thank you very much for sharing that. This is from Pete. Pete is a longtime listener who goes way back. I remember a very long while ago, you were talking about using Thunderbird for your email client. I know that you no longer use it and now use Outlook. I tried Outlook both at home and at the office. I never did really like it. I have several accounts that I need to keep track of and I use Thunderbird. But for the longest time, I had to also use Outlook because I had trouble with calendar invites not working properly. I am happy to say that an add-on has been made for Thunderbird. It's made to work with Exchange accounts. I now no longer have to use Outlook for my calendar invites. It was not free, 10 euros, but worth every penny. The name of the add-in is called OWL for Exchange. Thought you might like to know in case there are others like me that do not like Outlook. As always, I love the shows and have been a listener almost since the very beginning. I am not an IT professional, but learn a lot from your podcast. If I have the opportunity to help family and friends, all that I ask is that they let me put a shortcut on their desktop for your Amazon link. I let them know this is how they can help my education. That is awesome. I love that. Pete, thank you for checking in and sharing that, and I will get a link and add that. Now, he's referring to a project that I tried a few years back where I cut all ties at home to Outlook. Could I live on Thunderbird alone? But you know, when I started consulting and doing, I have to live and breathe Outlook because that is 99.9% of my client base use Outlook. So I must eat the same dog food as them. This is Rob. Hi, Mike. This is about water alarms. Happy New Year. I was listening to your recap of 2019 when you mentioned again the time that your air conditioner drain got clogged and the water overflowed and took out the ceiling of your bedroom. It reminded me that I was supposed to send you this link when you first mentioned it at the year after it first happened. But I forgot to do it back then, so I'm doing it now. I had a similar problem a few years back when my dishwasher pump started leaking and flooded our kitchen, dining room, and basement below. After I got everything dried out and repaired, I found these battery-operated alarms that I have now placed under the dishwasher, all my sinks, and in the basement. They work great and have let me know of leaks under my sink and down in the basement. They also alarm when the batteries get low. I will have our Amazon link for this product. And Bob, thank you so much, because you're right. You need several of these all over the house. This is a new listener from New Mexico, Michael, who sends a nice email that I'm the best computer podcast on the internet. Keep up the good work. Thank you for listening and for writing in. This is from Nathan, Windows 10 and USB. Hey, Mike, I'm finding vague and uncertain fixes online for this one, hoping you know something more concrete. Windows has a long track record of abusing USB storage devices. And once the file system becomes the right kind of corrupt, Windows Explorer can't bear to have the driver present without locking up. Nuking or replacing the device is annoying for thumb drives. Is the stuff of migraines when it is now my 16 terabyte Dobo S? Windows keeps trying to run check disk, running it off install media, finds over 2,000 orphan files, but stops with unspecified error. Hoping this was being caused by Windows I reinstalled, was due anyway, but still a mistake. It is now scanning and repairing Drive G for an hour now, even though I tried to skip scanning. Fresh install won't start until finished, and there are no guarantees it will work after. I have an eSATA card on the way, hoping this gives better results, but looking for a way to fix the Drobo in the meantime. Any suggestions? Now, he continues with a follow-up email. It finally stopped scanning. Took a very long time starting, then blue screened and rebooted. It's currently spinning again and has been for a long time, but I didn't try to scan anything. So we'll see. I don't know if it's just USB. I'm wondering if you got to reformat and redo the Drobo. I know that's horrible, and that's a horrible recommendation for me to give to that. But have you ran any of the utilities for the Drobo to see that everything's good and everything's fine? Have you looked? I know it's just basic, but Crystal Disk Info. Are there real problems maybe with your device that it's alerting you? I know Windows is very sensitive, but I had this problem happen on a drive that was a 3 terabyte Barracuda. You know, way back, Barracuda used to be good for Seagate, and I had the 3 terabytes. You know, I only owned 3 in my life, and all 3 eventually failed. That's not right. So it's solid state drives all the way, unless, like right now, I have my 6 terabyte Western Digital Black Caviar. That is my go-to internal mechanical drive if you need it. And for me, it's just got to be a junk drive if it's going to be, you know, super big. I don't have any other suggestions for Nathan. If you, by listening to this, think of some utilities or some things he could be doing, or you recognize this problem with USB and Windows 10, is there something he could be doing that can help this? So, Nathan, thank you, and we'll try to get you some more help. This is from Chris, the title, My New Computer Build. Hi, Mike. I listened to the show where you described the computer that Carrie is building for you and thought that since my machine is over 6 years old, I should build a new system for myself. While it currently runs fine with no problems, I could use some technology updates. I just finished putting it together and it booted to the BIOS. Hooray. For me, the build is never a problem. Oh, that's always the problem for me. He continues, it's the next step that gives me grief, and that's transferring my programs, settings, and data to the new machine. I've used PC Mover programs from Asus and Laplink. I remember Laplink in the past, and yes, they do a fairly good job, but in my experience, they don't move everything. I'm lucky to get 80% of my programs moved, and many of those will need to have their settings manually set after the move. Now, I'm going to interject here. One of the things when I'm doing a new build, I don't look forward to it, but I want to reinstall everything fresh with the latest version. So I, rather than moving the apps, I would rather make sure I have the login to the website, the latest serial number. Maybe I have to disengage or deactivate in order to reactivate on the new system. So I made sure I went through all those programs. And this is a time now to clean up and maybe not install everything. So I don't need, now I know a lot of people and it would help them to be able to transfer and move programs. But you know what? There's going to be something maybe kludgy or missed that I don't want. I want to install everything fresh. I want a perfect system running, which is what I'm using right now. And I just jinxed it. And the computer gods are going to hit me hard tonight probably for this. But my system's running so good. All the software, everything. I'm going to regret saying that. He continues, I wanted to write you about a new method that I tried, and it worked better than I had hoped. I used Acronis True Image with their Universal Restore to do the job. It's a two-step process. First, I used Acronis True Image to make a backup of the old machine. Then I restored that image to the new machine. This is followed immediately with the Universal Restore. You point Universal Restore to a folder containing drivers for the new hardware, and it will modify the restored OS to install those drivers when it boots. I've done that with Shadow Protect. He goes on, I crossed my fingers, rebooted, and was thrilled to see my familiar desktop appear on the new machine. So far, every program I tried works and has my old settings. The desktop icons weren't in the same places, but they were all there. The last step was to change the Windows license to the one purchased for that machine. I know that this method isn't for everybody, but I'm thrilled with the results and wanted to share this with your listeners. Keep up the good work. By the way, I ordered my parts from Amazon and used your link when I did. Just a way of saying thank you for all that you do. Chris, awesome email. Thank you for sharing that. And it's a great story, something to consider. Moving from one hardware set up to another. I always think of that as a recovery for a crash system, not moving on to a new build. So I like this. You know, you got to think outside the box for a lot of this. Oh, we got a lot more email. The Computer Doctor, Kevin, thank you. Hi, Mike. On the last show, you talked about closing the RDP port 3389. Do you do this at the firewall untangle level? If so, do you have a good set of directions of doing so on the untangle? Also, when you set up an UTM like these, do you typically set up the ISP router in bridge mode, run double NAT, or set up the UTM as an invisible bridge and just utilize its filtering apps and firewall? I do an invisible bridge. There's no disabling that port. You just don't enable it. So no ports are enabled by default on the Untangle firewall. You gotta manually put the ports in that you want to enable. For me to disable it, I had to uncheck the box. That was not a problem. He continues. Speaking of Untangle, we've been partners for a number of years, but last year found the same or very similar hardware they use for their small businesses firewalls on Amazon. It's a better price and with more horsepower too. So we buy these and it is very easy to install Untangle and get it up and running yourself. We then manage these for our MSP clients as firewall as a service and bundle it with our managed services. I will say that the Wi-Fi from the Untangle boxes leave a lot to be desired. So if you're going to need strong Wi-Fi, plan on deploying a Unify AP or something else. And he has the link. Again, I'm going to interject. I don't buy the appliances with the Wi-Fi because I want to put my own Wi-Fi solution in. So I usually buy the Untangle appliance without Wi-Fi. And then I have separate Wi-Fi devices, whether it be the Unify, the Ubiquiti, or smaller Wi-Fi needs with Asus in a mesh mode, or air mesh, as they call it. He continues, speaking of Unify, we've been buying our gear from DoubleRadius.com for years. Much like StreakWave, they are a VAR for gear like this and are very Amazon competitive and have their own support. I've not needed to use their support yet, but I do owe Jason Miller a beer or two at the next conference. I recently asked him for a little of his expertise in checking out a recent good size Unify deployment we did of 11 APs, 24-port PoE switch, US gateway, and cloud key, and man, did he come through. He spent about an hour checking out the controller with me and making a handful of tweak suggestions and really showed his expertise. I mean, I've done a few similar Unify deployments and kind of new things, and that's sort of like me. But his knowledge, way so impressive. I implemented the tweaks he suggested, and the homeowner is very pleased with our work, but Jason gets a lot of the credit. This is a 10,000 square foot, three-story, fully wired smart home. We were brought in by the home theater expert after the prior IT guy angered all of the homeowner by milking him and selling all kinds of unneeded junk and barely deploying an open mesh system. That was troublesome for the past 2 years. Again, huge thanks to Jason. Jason is regular listener, and boy, he knows his stuff, and it's great. And he's been a longtime contributor to the show, and I always look forward to meeting with him and Rachel, his wife, at all the various conferences. Finally, this same home has about 20 Sonos connected amps, all hardwired throughout the home. He's been having trouble for years where sometimes music will simply just skip or pause for a few seconds mid-song. Doesn't matter whether he's streaming it from his phone, pulling from a local hardwired library NAS, or other sources. The problem is sporadic but frequent. Recently, Sonos told the home theater guy they know this is a problem and are working on it. But this customer has had this problem for years. They also didn't give him written proof, just verbally told him on the phone. Supposedly, this is not a problem with their newer model amps, but replacing 20 of them at around $750 each is not an option. This isn't really our department, so I'm trying to stay involved, but also keeping out of it. But I thought if any of your listeners happen to have seen this problem or have suggestions, I'd be happy to pass them on or pass them up the chain. Kevin, thank you so much. Great email. Couple things on Sonos. I am not an expert at all, but I've noticed clients at home getting more unsatisfied and ripping out their Sonos. So I'm not surprised you're having a problem. I have not queried exactly what's wrong, but it's been the quality of the songs, how things were working, and the sound. And I know Sonos in theory is great, but can you really replace wireless for wired? I mean, you can't. I want wired devices through the house wherever you can, and speakers that you then control through a sophisticated receiver that you can have set up with zones. See, I'd rather deploy a huge Marantz and then have all the different things, you know, all the different hard cabled for the speakers. I don't know. I'm seeing more and more angry Sonos owners. But if you have a suggestion for a fix that I can share with Kevin, I would greatly appreciate it. This is from Bill, and it's about Microsoft 365 info and question. We use Microsoft for 365 directly. If I need tech support, I usually have someone calling me within 15 minutes. The trick is to say I need support in the tenant and request a call. As an MS partner, they will give you a markup, but you have to do the billing, last I knew. You can also work with one of the distributors below. By now, they should be willing to do the billing for you in return for a piece of the action. We have D&H Distributing, Ingram, actually Ingram Micro, and Synex Tech Data. I will have links to all of these for you as we look. I'm also going to put PAX 8 in there that was added by Tom in one of the post shows in the chat. So that's another vendor that actually you could do a lot more than just Microsoft Office. And I started looking into that because of its tie-in directly with Synchro, and I could do my automatic billing. So I'm looking at that. I want to definitely partner with something that's easy. If it can integrate into my RMM, so much the better. But it's nice listing a lot of these different distributors that some of you may not know exist, and I will have them in the show notes. Final email from Jonathan. I have a few basic PowerShell questions about execution policy. My understanding is that the default execution policy in Windows 10 is restricted, meaning that PowerShell scripts will not be allowed to run. Do you set it to unrestricted? No, I don't. Remote signed or all signed? Is unrestricted considered safe, and why? Do you set the execution policy when you initially set up Windows? If I was going to sign scripts, where would you recommend buying the certs? You know, Jonathan, you have a lot of questions. I'm just learning how to do the scripts and how to program in PowerShell. I have not even begun to actually deploy. So I need to hear from the PowerShell experts for helping me with Jonathan's questions here. So go back and rewind and play this email read again. And if you can help me answer these questions, I know they're going to be my questions not too far away from now into the future as I start to deploy my scripts. So now I'm going to be doing it as part of an RMM, and I started practicing some, and I've had no problem with I didn't have to do any certs. I didn't have to do any permission changes, and maybe that's because I'm pushing them through my RMM, my Synchro, and I'm not doing them where it's nothing else, where I'm just doing it by myself, and I do not do a script install of Windows 10. It's so easy. I probably should for the tweaks, but I'll tell you, we got it down and do it so fast. We can install Windows 10 and tweaked in 15 minutes on a solid state drive, including everything tweaked up the way we want. So yes, be nice to script it, but you know, there's been no need right now. I think if I had a client that wanted 50 or 60 computers, yeah, I better do something with an imaging or some kind of script install. But I haven't been lucky enough to have that, so I don't have that problem. We are going to do a speedy cover. I'm going to speed it up for covering these SSD tips, where I'm going to link to them more than anything else. So how to optimize your SSD for faster performance. And one of the things that this link is going to have is IDE versus AHCI mode, registry trips, registry tweaks, confirm trim is running, disable disk fragmenter, and disable indexing. Enable write caching for SSDs, update driver and firmware for your SSD, and optimize or disable page files for SSDs. Turn off system restore. I don't know about that one. Use high performance power settings. I always do that. And disable hibernation. But there's another way. Download the SSD tool for the solid state drive that you're going to put in. Samsung has a great utility called Samsung Magician software. You absolutely have to use that, and you could take care of optimizing with the trim. Now, this brings up, only in the Samsung world, another performance tweak, and it's called Rapid Mode. Rapid Mode is paired exclusively with Samsung 840 EVO SSDs and available as a feature of the accompanying Samsung SSD Magician software toolset. When enabled, Rapid Mode is inserted as a filter driver in the Windows storage stack. The driver actively monitors all storage-related activity between and among the operating system, user applications, and the SSD. The Rapid technology analyzes specific traffic and leverages spare system resources, DRAM and CPU, to deliver and read acceleration through intelligent caching of hot data and write optimization through coordination with the SSD. You have to have a lot of RAM. If you don't have a lot of RAM in your system, and I recommend at a bare minimum 16 gigs, I would prefer if you have 32 or 64, then you turn them on, this on. You know why? All that I read, it's a RAM disk. It's an old style RAM disk that caches your writes to the SSD. Of course it's going to be fast. So I have 64 gigs of RAM, and not every drive allows it. And, oh, by the way, since it is a RAM disk, I have multiple solid-state Samsung drives, two, that could have used the Rapid Mode, but you're only allowed one per system. And if you have an NVMe, it's not even available for that. So it's only certain Samsungs. Now, I've turned it on for my main system, for my 2-terabyte Samsung, because I got 64 gigs of RAM to play with. I have some RAM to spare for a RAM disk, and I'm seeing phenomenal results on that 2-terabyte drive. I also enabled it on what was my old system. That's a Samsung 500 gig that Rapid Mode is available because I have 32 gig of RAM in that system, and that is my Synchro test box. So something I did, and I'm proud of myself, and this is going to sound so basic. Last Saturday, I bought a power supply that arrived from Amazon that is the 550-watt version of the 750 quiet Corsair that I have now running in my main system. And I replaced that power supply by myself. Carrie would be proud, and it was watching Carrie's videos that I literally gutted the system. The only thing that's in there, because remember, I moved some of the components to my new system here. The only thing that's there is the motherboard, a Samsung hard drive, and that's it. But what a great test system. It's still a Core i5. It's got 32 gig of RAM. It's got a nice, fast 512 gig Samsung SSD. I did a fresh install of Windows 10, and it is whisper quiet. Literally under the desk, behind me, over my head, our workbench, it's just on the floor, with a power cord and an Ethernet cable. No monitor, no mouse, nothing. It's just sitting there as a test system. I got my Synchro RMM agent on it. I got instant house call on attendant mode on it. And it is the official test system for MHS Consulting. And it was my old system. But I wanted to share that. But it was the noise of the power supply that I couldn't take. And getting a power supply that's quiet, boy, that makes such a difference. Like right now, I have all this hardware running on this new system, and there's no noise at all. It is so quiet, you don't even know it's running. So you have to be able to have enough RAM to turn that on. And that, to me, is the quintessential question to answer on whether you turn that on. So now, how do you optimize your SSD in Windows 10? There's a great link: removing the page file, disabling indexing, disable prefetch and superfetch, verify the trim, disable fast startup, move temp folders, move user folders, and set recycle bin size. I don't know about the last three, but I'll tell you what. Between the two links that I have, you should be able to properly tweak any solid state drive, but begin with the manufacturer utility if there is one. And there's one for Silicon Power, which I use a lot of SP SSDs. There's ones for, I think, Crucial, Intel, and Samsung. Check out the manufacturer's website, and you should go with that utility. And then the things that that utility doesn't cover, go by the tweaks. Final topic, StarDock. At StarDock.com, they are very good at inexpensive utilities to help improve how Windows looks, how Windows works. I own Start 10 to change. It's a great product, Start 10. It's to change the menu to make it look like Windows 7 or classic mode. But you could do that with classic shell. And this is a little fancier, a little nicer, a little more features. But I'll tell you, I don't need that anymore. I'm living with the Windows 10 menu, and I'm going to go over tweaking that next week. So bye-bye Start 10. But here are two utilities that I can't live without. Fences. I can't live without Fences now. I have all of my programs grouped into different Fences on my desktop. When you see the link and you see the demo for Fences, you'll get it. But I'll tell you, my new favorite utility is called Groupie, and it's $3.74. You can organize multiple applications into group tabs on your Windows desktop. So you know how your browser, you have different tabs? How would you like to have 10 applications opened and they're as tabs to switch? Multiple Excel spreadsheets and they're just tabs. Multiple programs, multiple browsers, and they're all together grouped how you want to group them. For under $4, I recommend Groupie. Check that out. The final link, and I'll put this up in the video, it is the Logitech Ergo mouse. This is the MX Ergo. It's a trackball mouse. It's Bluetooth and it's wireless. I don't use the wireless. I use the Bluetooth. There's a position adjusting for this. I'll tell you, I didn't think I would ever like a trackball. And you know, I don't like it all the time. So I use it in conjunction with my current mouse. But there's something else that this does that really lends it to me. So you can't see this, but on the right-hand side of my desk, and I'm right-handed, I have three mice here. I have the mouse for Windows, but I also have my iMac mouse, my Apple Smart Mouse, or whatever they call it. Well, guess what? There are two buttons for Bluetooth, that one and two, and I can just click that and switch between pairing with Windows and pairing with my iMac, and it's sitting at a perfectly ergonomic position of my right hand. I did not think I'd ever get excited about a trackball mouse, but there are sometimes it's more comfortable when I'm just scrolling and reading something or doing something. I will have our Amazon link. Check it out. I think on Amazon, it's like $77. You might like this. So that's my tip. And I can't believe that I covered everything for tonight. And we did it almost 50 minutes. It's a little longer show. To support the show, you've mentioned throughout, I mentioned all these different Amazon links that I'm going to have. Half the emails mention that they use our Amazon link. Please, that is the best way to support the show. Supporting the sponsors, but supporting Carrie Holzman and myself, we share an Amazon link. If you go to miketechshow.com or go to tech-vets.com. You will see the link. Click on that before you make the purchase. And now it'll take you back to Amazon. And anything you add to the shopping cart, guess what? We get a percentage when you check out and pay for it. We get a commission, but your price stays the same. And what a great way to support our shows. We thank you from the bottom of our hearts. Thank Instant House Call with their incredible remote access product for supporting your clients unattended. And we welcome and thank again Magnus Box. Click on that link, download the client, and start a demo backup. I promise once you see it in action, that's what you're going to be rolling out for all your backups. And remember, you will get half price if you mention the Mike Tech Show for the first 3 months. You're going to save some money. That's awesome. That's it. We also Fabs Auto Backup 7 Pro. Incredible. That's how I migrate from one platform to the other. And that's how we're migrating anybody that gets a new system. We like to install all the new apps fresh. And then we move the data with Fabs and all the settings. But you heard tonight, you got other ways. Whew, that's it. I'm wiped. Thank you for staying subscribed and listening, and I will see everyone back here next week. Same time, same channel. Bye-bye, everybody.
You've been listening to The Mike Tech Show, a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Please visit techpodcast.com.